is URN University Radio Nottingham.
Hello and welcome back to The Pulse. And so, this is a very special edition as we have just gotten back from the Union Council meeting. And boy, do we have some results to discuss. I'm Ben and I'm joined by Scarlett and Cora. So, overall, what do we think of sort of the proceedings as a whole?
I personally found them quite draining. It was 2 hours long and they were cutting it at 2 hours. So I think they meant to get through, I think, 10 motions, was it?
I believe it was 12 originally yes. wanted to get through.
And they got through 10 yes. of them. And so they had a strict cut-off point of 2 hours. And then they said, okay, we're not going to put any more motions past that. But to be honest, I don't think I could have taken any more motions. It's quite a draining experience. It's a lot of information to digest is what I'd say. That was my opinion of the sort of... Not that the setup wasn't bad. I thought that the officers communicated what people needed to do very well and there was a good level of control over discussion. It's just the amount of motions in one session is quite exhausting.
Well, this was a record amount of motions for the Students' Union since they, you know... Since records began, at least from what I've been told from the SU staff, they've never had this many motions before. So, gone on,
and it is true, looking at most of the motions, I did think they needed to be discussed and put to a motion. There's a couple that I thought, especially when I was sitting there towards the end, I thought, oh, I don't know if these are relevant.
I do think, though, that we did rush through a lot of those motions. Some of them could have done with a lot more time to have more discussion, kind of go more in depth into what was going to happen. As for many of them on the projector, there were documents in which all of the points were written on was kind of just projected to us all, and you didn't really have time to read through it if you weren't familiar already. And it was so many points that could have been important but were skipped over.
Yes, I think, well, we discussed the fact that the first motion did not actually occur, and if we want to say any more on that, I'd like to maybe discuss some of what Cora said about in relation to the second motion.
Yes, okay. So, the very first motion was 447.00, and that was to rename the Portland Building, and that vote did not go ahead. And that is simply because they said they were waiting on an internal report which would provide more information which may impact the results. So, that one didn't go ahead. But yes, on to the second motion, 447.01, mandatory consent training. That one passed with 18 yes votes, 1 no, and 2 abstain. And so what do we all think of that motion then? I feel this is the one where we thought there's a few kinks.
Yeah, I think we needed more time to be spent on this because I don't believe it was even projected.
It did have a Word document projected, however, there was not, the points weren't very expanded. It was kind of very briefly explained. And I do feel like, from a personal point of view, a lot of the methodology of implementing the mandatory consent training was not very thought out or had not been compared to issues that could
occur. Yeah, so the women's officer presented this motion and I agreed with all the stuff she was saying about the reasons why we need to have mandatory consent training. But as you just highlighted there, she sort of jumped over the implementation parts. So when it came to the actual discussion, that was the main points that people were raising, was how, because it's such a divisive issue, unfortunately, for some people. And I think, for example, I think the idea that you could be prevented from a society if you fail, you are prevented from joining a society if you fail to attend the training. But what if you can't make the training on the specific day? And she said, oh, there'll be some sort of leniency for that. But she didn't really go into detail. Not that she hadn't thought of an idea at all, but it just wasn't on hand,
and it was kind of skipped over.
Yeah, and I think that's like, because I don't think that many people in that room or essentially across the whole student body would disagree with the motion, but about the implementation of it, and I don't think that was appropriately debated enough.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I do think, along with the implementation, there was a lot of issues around the protection of survivors of sexual abuse, of people who are triggered by it, because it for a lot of the methodology, it would require those people to identify themselves. And we did have a lot of questions and discussions opened up around that, which I felt the answers, again, were skipped over, like the example you used.
Yeah, that idea of anonymity and whether they'd actually have to register their names and things like that, as well as there was quite a lot of debate about the specific definitions that were going to be used and all stuff that's really, actually really important. And I think a lot of it was like, I think a lot of the ideas about the presentations of the motions, which I think we'll discuss with each one, the presenter spent quite a lot of time on the reasons why we should have the policy, and that wasn't really up for debate. And perhaps if she spent more time going through the specific implementation, specific definitions, I would have felt more comfortable at the end, because of course I agree with the passing of the motion, but I still feel a bit uneasy about how exactly that this is going to be implemented and what's the result.
I agree with you there as well, in that it's concerning that the motion has passed, considering the method hasn't been fully kind of planned out. It hasn't really been considered thoroughly. And for something as important as addressing consent, as supporting survivors of abuse and preventing it, I think it can't just be a botched job. And my concerns with this motion currently is that it may just turn into this issue is really important to students at the moment and we need to do something about it now. Whereas a bit more time, a bit more consideration could ensure that it's something that will work.
Yes, because realistically, I think it's going to be, I don't think they actually mentioned this was another part of the lack of detail, but it should be implemented by the beginning of next year, because what they were arguing is that every student should go through this sort of training before the end of first term. So I assume they're not implementing this for another, say, 9 or 10 months, which should have given them the scope to argue the specifics, because that's fundamentally what will make this policy a success or not, is those specific details.
Because I think this was sort of my concern, what I was sort of having a little whisper to Cora about. Because on one hand, sort of you had them say, oh, you know, you're not necessarily going to be identified. But if you can't be identified, how are they going to confirm whether or not you've completed the training? Which, bit of a sticker for me. I just think, like what you guys have summed up really, it just needs to go back to the drawing board. It needs to be sort of, basically, in terms of just the implementation of it worked out, because no one's disagreeing with sort of what the aims are, but in order to actually achieve those aims, you really sort of need to nail the implementation. But at least that's my two cents anyway. But is there anything sort of else we want to say about that motion? Do we want to blitz through some others?
I think we should move on to the next one, which was
Also quite another beefy one, actually. So, motion 447.02 was combating anti-Semitism and supporting Jewish students. This got 14 yes votes, 4 no votes, and 3 abstains. And so the motion passed. And so, same question again. What do we think?
I think this one in particular was very similar to the mandatory consent training. Like, it's something we all agree needs to be done. But I felt that a lot of the methodology, again, could be expanded upon more. It could be kind of better explained how it's going to be implemented across the university as a whole. And I feel like a lot of this could just be due to the fact, again, that each of the motions only had 10 minutes to both be presented and for open discussion and Q&A with the panellists.
And not as a direct criticism of the person that presented the motion, but it was the same one who did the mandatory training policy motion. And I think if I remember, for both, the Word document was sort of zoomed out. You couldn't actually, I mean, we were all sitting at the back and we couldn't read any of it. And so I was desperately trying to hear what she was saying. And I was sort of catching on to, oh yeah, all these obviously fighting against anti-Semitism, stuff the majority of people across the student body agree with. But quite a lot of that 10 minutes was sort of spent on sort of setting the scene, which I do agree is actually important. Like, I think it is valuable to set out why and the reasons why we need this motion and why we need the motion to pass. But I felt a bit like she was just sort of trying to get into how she's going to implement policies, and it was like, right, 10 minutes done. So maybe if she was given 15, maybe even 20 minutes, well, that's quite a long time for somebody to speak. But maybe the idea of you could have multiple speakers on a motion and they could sort of do different parts of the motion could help really sort of get into the details of the specific motion to make it easier to understand and easier to vote on. Ultimately, if you know how a policy is going to be implemented, it makes the decision on voting yes or no much easier. I would highlight the four abstains, maybe could be part of that reason.
Three abstains, four no's, three abstains.
But equally, compared to the motion on women's issues, this could be perhaps due to the topic of anti-Semitism, whether it's more abstains, because some people hold specific views on that.
I suppose also moving on to the next motion, 447.03, age as a protected characteristic in higher education and beyond. And also this particular motion got 20 yes votes, 0 no votes, 1 abstain, and so the motion was passed. I don't have a lot to say about this one. It was very well presented, very well delivered, clear aims, done.
Exactly. I think that's shown through the fact there was no questions, no discussions.
And I suppose that's reflected in the vote, you know, not a single no vote. So, winner, I suppose.
Yes, it also like highlighted the issue to me personally, because I've sort of heard of like and experienced things about women on campus and consent, and also heard about things to do with anti-Semitism. But the idea of mature students, I obviously knew about it, but it's not something I'd actively thought about. And he really made me sort of contemplate, oh yes, and sort of gave all the facts, you know, 23% of students are mature at university and they feel like they have no voice. And the fact is that age is, I believe, a protected characteristic under the Equality Act 2010, but it's not a characteristic included within the Liberation Officer. So I think all the points they made were valid. It was delivered in a very clear, concise way. But then again, they were sort of asking for something easier than what the previous two motions were asking for.
I think potentially it wasn't that it was easier. I think it was more that it was summarised more concisely and clearly compared to the other two. Because the other two, if we particularly looked at the Word documents, when we could see them, there were quite large chunks of text that were very difficult to read. And there was a lot going on that it was very difficult in those 10 minutes to be able to listen to what the speaker was saying whilst also reading the massive chunks of text. Whereas the presenter for the age as a protected characteristic in higher education and beyond was very straight to the point, made his kind of asks very clear, and that was both in his speech and on the Word document that was shared for everyone, the manifesto.
Well, I do agree with you, but I would say in some ways that the aims of the person who was arguing that motion was easier to achieve. So he argued for a representative of mature students at careers fairs. That is easier to implement than a university-wide mandatory consent training scheme. And he did mention training, but then he said training, and then he just didn't go into the details. So that's, he also didn't go into the details, but perhaps in the way he delivered it in that more succinct way, it was not open to as much discussion. Perhaps because people felt like they had less of an opinion on it because they themselves were not mature students. Because I thought I have no idea what they go through because I'm not a mature student. I thought, oh, you know, I have an opinion, obviously, as a woman.
I think as well, the fact that a lot of the panellists weren't mature students, I think bar one who identified as a mature student, kind of goes to show that, again, potentially, like you're saying, maybe the panellists as well as those watching did not feel comfortable to address the issue but wanted to be supportive, which in a way could have been an issue with this motion.
Which is completely fair, I suppose. And you know what else is fair? Number four. So this was motion 44704, which was a referendum on the continued membership of the National Union of Students. As this was a referendum, this was only a simple majority that was required. And so it got 12 yes votes, 4 no votes, and 5 abstain votes, and therefore the motion passed to referendum. And so this one was quite a particularly interesting one, I thought. Almost a bit sort of bit of a clash between some of the panelists asking questions and sort of the speaker providing, you know, the proposer putting forward the motion, which was rather entertaining as student media to watch. But the reasons for leaving the NUS was due to issues with anti-Semitism, and I think there were some good points in terms of the president of the NUS, it seems to twice now, had issues with being an anti-Semite. Ooh, I can understand why that is a bit, you know, not ideal. But I mean, what do you guys think of this motion?
I'd argue that the proposer, the main thing they were asking for us was to stand in solidarity with Jewish students on campus by kind of leaving, questioning our membership with the NUS. But I did feel that the way the proposer was kind of delivering their speech could at times be quite confrontational with the panelists, as he was very passionate, which I'm all for. But I do think at times it was kind of being like, if you decide to stay, then you're being anti-Semitic.
It was, this was probably my favourite motion, I would say. The proposer was very, very persuasive. The whole room was quiet, and the tone of voice he put on, you know, I was actually, you know, focused, and I was listening to every word he was saying. I can't remember if he put up his manifesto behind him. I don't believe he did.
I don't remember it specifically.
And
what about
why?
So I think I was just so focused on what he was actually saying, I didn't even notice while I was trying to read the blocks of text behind a person as they were speaking. I do agree with what you said. It is an avenue for removing, is it the Students' Union from, no, was it the, is it the university as a whole?
No,
it's just the Student Union.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's removing the Student Union from the NUS. And this is, so it's not an argument about the NUS as a whole, it's an argument specifically about the anti-Semitism being the reason for us leaving the NUS. And although I agree with all of what he was saying about anti-Semitism, I don't know. It's so hard because it's such an important issue. And he was arguing it should be good enough for removing the Students' Union as a whole. But as you said, at times it felt a bit like, oh, you're going to be a bad person if you in some way argue against it.
It was sort of a very emotion-driven pitch. Mm. You
it was
know,
very persuasive.
One of the things that the proposer sort of said is, oh, don't make me have to go back to the Jewish society and say, oh, it failed, you know, because I don't want to be the person to deliver that bad news.
Which, I feel like that sort of delivery will resonate with some people, where others...
Put off others, which I suppose is reflected in, you know, the results, quite the split, despite, you know, anti-Semitism as a topic being not so split in terms of condemning it. But I think, you know, as we've sort of concluded, it was the delivery, which was a bit love it or hate it, I suspect.
I think it is good, though, that this motion is being kind of put out to the student body rather than being just killed and failed at that union council, because then it means that everyone will get a chance to have their say, which I think is important.
Because it was a motion to referendum, which exactly, you know, it's not that the chap presenting just wanted us to leave unilaterally. You know, he just simply wanted the students to have a say, and, you know, if they say otherwise, so be it, I suppose. But yes, moving on to our fifth motion. No, not fifth, it's just motion 4400.
447.05.
Thank you. I'm losing it today.
Gender neutral toilets.
Love the pulse. So yes, this was a continuation of a prior motion to implement where they can implement gender neutral toilets within sort of university facilities. You know, take for example sort of the Portland building. And so this motion got 14 yes votes, 4 no votes, 2 abstain, and 1 spoiled ballot. And so therefore the motion passed. And so, yeah, again, sort of similar to the higher education one, I don't particularly have too much to say, simply because it's a continuation policy, and I like the toilets in Portland. That's my summary, really. But yeah, is there anything sort of you guys would like to mention about this motion?
I think one of the interesting parts of this motion was the mention of how to handle providing period products, which I think is an important discussion that will need to be had when deciding whether or not to go forward with gender neutral toilets, because of course there are a huge number of students on campus who will require those products or may not be able to have access to them at home. And I felt that that was an important thing to bring up as part of this motion. And I think that was the only thing that really grabbed me, because I agree that, like, particularly with Portland Building, I much prefer using gender neutral toilets. It's not kind of as intimidating to go into, whereas like gendered toilets where you've got loads of cubicles, you can hear what everyone's talking about, and it's a bit awkward.
The only thing to raise about that is what Ave and Mark Fannin raised, is would this be the same in every building? And the proposer couldn't answer that question. So I like the Portland toilets, and I agree with you. I think I don't even think about the fact that they're gender neutral. It just doesn't even enter my head. But that may not be able to be implemented across all the buildings on campus. If you think a lot of them are older, a lot, like if I'm just thinking of the ones in the Pope Building who need badly redone, but I don't know if they could. There's enough space in that building to sort of implement what Portland have done.
It's definitely down to kind of structure of the buildings and whatnot. And like the only other gender neutral toilets I can think of on campus, particularly University Park campus, are in Monica Partridge Building, but it's the top floor rather than
every other floor,
which is quite interesting, in that they kind of went with the top floor and went, yes, we'll have gender neutral toilets here, and then as you get nearer,
it's harder
to
reach.
Yeah, and towards the bottom, it's gendered.
Exercise.
By the sounds of it.
Ah, dearie me. Speaking of keeping a healthy lifestyle, though, motion 447.06 was the sustainable food motion, and this motion got 17 yes votes, 3 no votes, and 1 abstain, and so therefore the motion passed. And this was a motion basically to reduce carbon emissions on campus through various means, such as banning beef in all student union outlets, which I had a few queries about, which I didn't get a chance to ask, unfortunately. Which was basically, how are they going to get sort of the chains such as Costa or Subway to stop selling beef? Because surely that's like not a decision the store could make on a local level. But
yeah, I found this motion really strange, actually. And I think if I was a panelist, I would have voted against it, because I found the reasoning quite strange. Okay, so we're going to help reduce carbon emissions, therefore we're going to do this by reducing food miles and meals that produce a lot of carbon. I agree with all the sentiments, but the actual specifics of what they said, as you said, about the specific implementation, they're just going to get rid, like they didn't explain how and how they get rid of it, how they'd work with the bigger companies, and even sort of the whole idea of like diversifying the sort of range of foods. I'm thinking of I don't know if it's there this year, but you could get African food in the food court, which heavily revolves
that has kind of closed.
I think it's closed
store.
But it was very, very popular last year, and their meals revolved around meat. So where we join the balance between that sort of environmental push but also protecting and preserving cultural foods.
Yeah, and I think I agree with everything you're kind of questioning there. But one thing to note as well is that the speaker was not the proposer of this motion. They were just standing in. So I do feel like a lot of the questions we have, many others at the council may have had as well, could have been answered by the proposer, who was unfortunately unable to attend, that is. And I think I personally, again, like if I was a panelist, I wouldn't vote in favour of this as well, just because there were so many questions that were left unanswered for me. Like, I'm not an avid beef eater myself, but it does bring the question of, should we kind of be preventing access to these foods? Kind of like with...
It's a question about freedom of choice, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it's the whole idea of people want to eat meat, they can. If people don't want to eat meat, they can. So, but removing the option for either, I don't believe is sort of equal with ideas, principles about equality and freedom of choice and autonomy.
And I suppose sort of similar to what Cora was saying in terms of actually getting people moving around campus, there we are, just to try and make some form of a segue. Motion 447.07 was for the 904 University Hopper bus to have a bus stop in Beeston. And yeah, the motion was actually, it sounds quite vague, but in terms of the actual planning out, they actually had like a specific street and they had reasoning behind it. You know, university students that go to UNAD, which is basically the Derby campus, a busy street for that. And yeah, so this got 17 yes votes, 2 no votes, 1 abstain, 1 spoilt ballot, and so the motion passed. And yeah, I thought this was a pretty good idea, especially as a Beeston resident myself, not biased.
So would you use this bus?
Again, I'd have to... They did specify a street. Couldn't tell you the exact street. It has eluded my mind. But if it was close to Broadgate, yeah, why not?
Yeah, because I asked one of my friends that lives in Beeston and she said, oh, that's in the middle of Beeston. It's not worth my while. So I think it's that sort of debate because...
Because if it's like the city centre for like Ben who lives at Broadgate, it's not really worth kind of retracing your steps to then come back the same way and pass where you live. And I personally live in Beeston as well, and the 904 bus actually passes the street I live on. So if that route suddenly changed to go to the city centre, it wouldn't be worth my while to get on that bus, even though if it was just stopping at the bus stop, literally at the bottom of my street, I would get on it and I'd use that each day because it saves me getting drenched in the rain.
Additionally, I think one of the panellists, who I believe was called Summer, if my notes are correct, wanted a stop in the residential area of Derby. I think it's St. Christopher's Court, if I'm correct.
Yeah, St. Christopher's Court, where most of the Derby students reside.
And I think that was a good argument, but it was also sort of, oh, can you please stop on my street? It's starting to get like and a bit like, is this sort of a slippery slope of everyone can just maybe appeal, or whoever luckily gets to be on the panel for motions like this can suddenly appeal and be like, oh, hey, can I have an amendment where the bus stops on my street? So I thought, maybe it's so hard about where to put the specific bus stop, who would appeal to most. And I think that can get quite difficult. But broadly, I think it's a good idea. There seems to be a desire for it, and I'm sure it'll help a lot of people out from walking in the rain.
Which is fair enough. And also, speaking of helping people out, we have motion 447.08. You're still sticking with the transitions. And this was a proposal for the creation of a trans officer role. So currently we have the part-time LGBT plus officer, but this one in particular wanted to create one specifically for those who are trans or non-binary, simply due to the dedicated needs that differ from, say, your bog standard bisexual like myself. And so this particular motion got 16 yes votes, 2 no votes, 3 abstains, and therefore the motion passed. And I actually did ask a question that was a little critical of the motion sort of during the council, because my concern was is that it would turn the the LGBT plus officer into an LGB officer. Ooh, not ideal.
Yeah, you argued that this would like segregate trans students away from the rest of the queer community.
Yes, because also they wanted to sort of create, sort of in the proposal, you know, separate forums and separate networks for those that are trans. And I think it's, you know, very good to have sort of the own space for discussion, especially for those that you bond with, because there's certainly less in common that, say, going back to my previous example, your standard bisexual would have sort of less in common with a trans person than one trans person to another. But I just my fear was is just that it, like you mentioned, it would just segregate everyone sort of separately into their own little camps, which I don't know whether that's a fair criticism or not, because I'm not trans, so I can't really speak.
It's a difficult discussion, and when I was looking through the motions before we attended tonight, this was one of the motions that I sort of thought about the most, and I sort of went around my friends and I just asked their opinions generally, and they all supported the creation of trans officer, but they all came up with a different criticism of perhaps why it shouldn't exist. In principle, they thought yes, representation, but they all highlighted issues like you're discussing. Oh, is this actually going to create long-term issues and perhaps be worse than the initial success of how we have a trans officer would create?
I think a lot of the time, like, I agree with the need for representation and with the motion itself, but it does, with long-term issues, kind of rise, will other groups want to have someone representing them? And then it just kind of, will the SU officers team grow and grow so that everyone has someone to represent them? And for me personally, an issue that I kind of had with that is the fact currently we don't actually have a welfare representative. We don't have
postgrad.
Yeah, so when we don't have roles filled, should we be adding other roles now? Or is it something to consider once we are able to ensure we have a full panel representing those officer roles?
Which I think is a fair point. And I suppose the reason why it is difficult to fill these roles is because people then, you know, leave university and just want to go on sort of and progress in the career, which brings us nicely into motion 447.09, which is the fossil free careers motion. And this was basically a motion to sort of bar any companies that work in sort of oil, gas, coal, that sort of thing, from you know, being endorsed by the SU and having sort of a space at careers fairs here, things like that. And so this motion got 11 yes votes, 6 no votes, and 4 abstain votes. And because this did not meet the threshold that was required for it to pass, this motion has gone to a referendum. Great, another one. Can't wait to cover that. Love news. Yeah, what do we think of this one?
I personally thought I disagreed with this motion. If I was a panelist, I would have voted against it. I think it was serving to a smaller group of people with specific political beliefs and did not serve the interests of the wider student community. It was essentially to stop oil. One of the examples was to stop oil companies coming onto career fairs. This, I was just thinking engineering and STEM, the career fairs. Ben, you covered a protest that happened at one of them against the oil companies. I think that's the correct way to go about it, to protest when they come onto campus, but I do not believe you should bar them from coming onto campus, full stop.
This reminds me, actually, there was a society at the council that actually didn't get the chance to ask the questions about
this. There were 3 of them sat in front of us near the back of the room, and they were very upset over the fact that they did not have a chance to answer either.
Because the thing is that this particular society, I'm not actually sure what society it was.
I'm not sure what they were, but I do know that they have, they're currently studying degrees in STEM, which is why they felt very passionately.
It wasn't just that. Their society that they came on behalf of has an official partnership with one of the companies that would have been barred by this, and they didn't get a chance to ask, which is, ooh, you know, kind of a bit of a kicker for them. And, you know, but it was also the very last motion, which sort of, you know, the last motion's got less attention. 2 motions voted on.
I think that's part of a wider criticism of the way it operated. Yes, I was getting tired 2 hours into it, and then they just, like, but then they randomly stopped it. I was already tired about half an hour in because of starting to accumulate so much information within a short period of time, and these really quick, right, 10-minute speech questions, right, that, to be honest, I even though I was tired, I would have rather heard the next 2 motions and properly explored this one in particular, because the people that wanted to ask questions were really upset, and it did feel like a failing of the sort of student union democracy in a way, because they were not able to answer their questions because suddenly the clock hit 8 o'clock and we all had to go.
And I think what made it more frustrating was the fact for a lot of the motions, the same people were being picked in the audience to answer questions, and quite a few of those people would kind of raise their point in the first sentence and then just
waffle
pretty much.
And there was generally some, like, good crowd control, but especially towards the end, I say people were just allowed to talk for the sake of talking. And I think sometimes in the way some of the motions were not presented by the proposer, it was by the seconder or their representative, and they often they were reading off the manifesto and they were not picking out the most important parts of the manifesto, which led to some of the questions being about less important aspects of the policy. So I believe then when the questions were happening, they were not the most important questions that could have been asked.
And no. When you look at the society who came and would be directly affected by fossil-free careers, not being able to answer, that's like very problematic, especially because it's them directly affected. And I think
because if this referendum passed and it's implemented in its most extreme form, it could potentially affect thousands of people's future careers.
Which I also, you know, is just not fair that, in a sense, that, you know, 21 panelists are voting on behalf of, what is it, roughly tens of thousands of students?
I think it's maybe about 30, 40,000 at this university.
But I suppose then again, it's the issue. They can't have a referendum on everything. So there has to be some sort of compromise. And whether this is a good one, you know, I suppose that's a question for another time. Because we are running out of time. And as we bring this section to a close, thank you for joining us on this very special highlight of The Pulse. And we'll catch you next time.
This is URN University Radio, Nottingham.